This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Accused mobster James Whitey Bulger was back in federal court on the South Boston waterfront today. The prosecution, instead of hammering Bulger with accusations, actually stood up and asked that one of its own cases against Bulger be dropped.
WBUR's Monica Brady-Meyerov is fresh from the court proceedings and back here in the studio. So, Monica, why would the prosecution want to drop one of its own indictments?
Well, this indictment for extortion, racketeering, several other charges dates back to 1994. And the reason the U.S. attorney gives is because they want to focus their resources on the more serious federal case pending against the defendant, basically the 19 murder charges, which also has some racketeering charges as well. And they say that if a jury finds him guilty of even one of those murders with an act of racketeering, Bulger will be in jail for the rest of his natural life.
Okay, so this is really fascinating because I didn't even know that you had to have court proceedings when the prosecution decided to drop charges against a defendant. I understand that Judge Wolf said he even wanted to give Whitey Bulger's provisional attorney some time to think about it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the U.S. government has the main role in this, but there is some discretion. It's not automatic because the court has some say in it, and so does the defendant. So his lawyer, Bulger's lawyer, Krupp, asked for some time to consult with Bulger and look at the related issues in regards to this, and they'll report back tomorrow whether or not they agree the charges should be dropped in this one indictment, but obviously keeping the murder indictments.
Okay, so Monica, the thing that everyone had initially expected the judge to consider today was whether or not Whitey Bulger will be declared indigent and entitled to a public defender. This all despite having been caught in California with $800,000 in cash in his apartment. So did the indigency issue even come up today?
It only came up in the respect that it's on hold, because until they sort out this indictment, which indictment they'll be proceeding with, they can't figure out the lawyer. And I should note, too, that Bulger's lawyer in court today accused the U.S. government of judge shopping, of basically wanting to get this case out of Judge Wolf's courtroom, because Wolf has a long and colorful history with the prosecution, because back in the 1990s, he held hearings in looking into the defense's assertion that Bulger and Flemmy were informants for the FBI. So there's some bad blood here that at least Peter Krupp, Bulger's lawyer, is accusing the government of wanting to move this case out of Wolf's courtroom.
WBUR's Monica Brady-Meyerov, thank you.
You're welcome.
Also today, news about who will represent Bulger going forward. After days of speculation, Massachusetts Lawyers Weekly is reporting that it will be two well-known Boston defense attorneys, Max Stern and Howard Cooper.
Reporter David Frank is with Mass Lawyers Weekly, and he broke the story, citing multiple sources. We spoke to him earlier this afternoon.
David, let's talk about these two attorneys. First, Max Stern. If I recall correctly, he's been involved in a number of high-profile cases, including the defense of former state senator Diane Wilkerson. Is that right?
That's correct. I mean, Max Stern has been on the scene for a long time. He did represent Diane Wilkerson. He was also involved representing one of the companies that were implicated in the Big Dig scandal. He's a guy who has been at the forefront of a lot of important federal cases and state cases in Massachusetts.
What kind of a reputation does he have in Boston's legal community?
Great trial lawyer, knows how to assess a case, knows how to determine whether a case is one that should be tried or that should be resolved with a plea. Very well respected by prosecutors, the kind of guy who will fight very hard when the lights are on and, you know, so to speak, when the case is in front of a judge or a jury. But when you're just dealing with him as a person just trying to work out arrangements, he's a gentleman. And in a case like this, with the magnitude of this matter and the stakes being as high, you certainly like to see a lawyer who as experienced and talented as Max Stern.
And tell us about the other attorney, Howard Cooper of Todd and Weld. What do we know about Howard Cooper?
Well, I mean, Howard Cooper is a guy who made a lot of news a few years ago in a civil case. He represented Judge Ernest Murphy in a libel lawsuit against the Boston Herald. He secured a $2+ million verdict in that case that went all the way up to the Supreme Judicial Court. Was affirmed on appeal. He does criminal work. He's got a combination of criminal and civil. He is very, very good with juries. He has a way of talking, not like a lawyer. You know, sometimes the lawyers run into trouble talking to jurors, talking to non-lawyers. They sort of run into that trap of getting into legalese. He breaks things down in a very sort of common sense, easy to follow approach. Excellent lawyer. Both lawyers, by the way, were named Lawyers of the Year by Lawyers Weekly over the years.
David, this is a case of enormous complexity, 19 alleged murders, a slew of organized crime charges dating back decades. This would be a huge challenge for any attorney, including these two. Why would any lawyer want to take on this case willingly?
Well, I mean, you know, the name of the game when you're a trial lawyer and when you're a criminal trial lawyer is to stand between the government and the person accused of a crime. And when you talk about a high-stakes, high-profile challenge, it's hard to envision one more significant than United States versus Bulger. So the system that we operate under is predicated on the notion that lawyers will be there to represent people accused of crimes, even if those crimes are unpopular ones or ones that members of the public, rightfully so, don't feel good about.
Well, fascinating case, and no doubt many fascinating narratives will come out of it. David Frank, thanks for talking to us today.
Thank you very much.
That's David Frank, reporter with Massachusetts Lawyers Weekly.
So, some big questions emerging from the Whitey Bulger story as it develops today. And listeners, we're inviting you to join the conversation. So, first of all, do you even think that Whitey Bulger deserves a defense provided by taxpayers?
And there's an even bigger question. Who would want to represent Bulger and why? And once they take on this case, what challenges will they face given the complexity of the multiple indictments for murder and federal racketeering going back for decades? If you have thoughts, opinions, or questions about this, give us a call right now at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. To help us through the legal thicket of this conversation, we're joined right now in the studio by Jeffrey Denner. He's the founder and partner of the Boston law firm Denner Pellegrino. He's represented the families of some of James Bulger's alleged victims through the years, and he was just at the federal court proceedings in South Boston. Jeffrey Denner, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
Good to have you. Also with us, she was a lawyer with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Boston and Philadelphia, where she prosecuted organized crime cases. I'm joined by Allison Burrows. She's now on the other side, a defense attorney and partner at Nutter, McLennan and Fish in Boston. And good to have you, Allison Burrows.
Nice to be here.
So let's start with this question that we expected to come up in federal court today. And let me start with you, Jeffrey Denner. This whole question about how is James Whitey Bulger going to pay for his legal defense? And why would he need, first of all, a public defender? Or why should this be on the taxpayer's dime when he's got all this money stashed away, we assume?
Well, any money he has stashed away is not his money anymore. Should it ever become evident where that money is, it's presumably ill-gotten gain, because I doubt he's ever had a real job in his life. And the government will seize that money, and it'll be forfeited just as they seize the other $800,000 they found in his wall. He is destitute. He does not have any money that he can use for anything. And why should the taxpayer pay for it? Because that really is what the United States is all about. We should want to pay for it. We should want to assure that every person, no matter how nefarious and no matter how odious a person they are, and James Whitey Bulger is way up there on that scale, that they get a fair trial, because that is the, kind of the basis of what America stands for. Without getting too much hyperbole and another legal term, doodle, in there, he deserves a fair trial. Anything less than a fair trial with good lawyers, and the kind of lawyers that do this work, even when they're appointed under the CJA contract, are very, very good lawyers. As a practical matter, I don't think that's going to be an issue, because apparently he's hiring, as we say, Max Stern and Howard Cooper, two very, very competent lawyers to represent him. Presumably the money he's going to pay them with do not come from his ill-gotten gain, the cash that he probably has stashed not only in that house out in California, but my best guess would be in lockboxes and banks all over the world, and in a variety of other safe apartments that he probably would fall back on if he had enough notice to get away. But as a practical matter, I would guess his family or friends, who probably can demonstrate that the money that they're going to be using is not ill-gotten gain and, in fact, is clean money, appear to be stepping up to pay for his defense.
Allison Burrows, let's talk a little bit about Max Stern and Howard Cooper, who apparently are going to be representing Bulger. What do we know about these two guys? We heard a little bit from our friend over there at Mass Lawyers Weekly, but what do you have to say about them?
I mean, I think David was spot on. Max Stern is a principal of his own law firm. He's been doing this for a long time. He passionately believes in the system. He's a smart, aggressive litigator. He knows his way around federal court. Howard Cooper is a founding partner at Todd & Weld. It's a little bit bigger shop, maybe 20 to 30 lawyers, which will help give him some of the resources he needs to handle a case of this magnitude. Also, a smart, aggressive guy, knows his way around federal court, a lot of self-confidence. It's a good team.
And what is attractive about a case like this to two crack lawyers like that? In other words, we're getting to the bottom of this question. Why would anyone want to take this case on? It's such a complex and such a obviously controversial. There's no way to describe it. I mean, everything sounds like an understatement.
You could have asked the other question, which is why wouldn't people want to do this case? And they're two equally interesting answers. But I think the reasons why people would want to do it are people that passionately believe in the system and want to make sure that Whitey Bulger gets a good defense. And let's face it, it's an extremely notorious case. It's going to be the trial of our generation if it goes to trial, and it'll be an interesting case to be associated with.
Hmm. It's not a tricky, it's a tricky thing, though, in this city to find two attorneys of this caliber like Max Stern and Howard Cooper who aren't conflicted out, I guess is the term, for example. You were just talking before we went on the air, Jeffrey Denner, that, for example, if the judge came to you and said, will you represent him, you couldn't, right?
Or if the client came to me and said, will you represent him? I couldn't, because in this particular case, I was actually involved with the families of two individuals who sued not only the FBI and the United States government through John Connolly and some very corrupt FBI agents for consorting with Bulger and Flemmi, but I also sued Bulger. And we got a judgment against James Whitey Bulger as well, so certainly I couldn't be involved in this. And I think more relevantly, you have a heck of a lot of lawyers who've represented criminal defendants in cases that have been related to Whitey Bulger over the years, either as co-defendants or in some cases in cooperating adversarial positions.
Hmm. Listeners, we're talking about the defense of James Whitey Bulger, the legal defense. What do you think of it? What are your questions? What are some of the challenges that you would expect to come up in the course of what will probably be a very long and complicated case? We've got two experts in the studio, Jeffrey Denner, founder and partner of the Boston law firm Denner Pellegrino, and Allison Burrows, a defense attorney and partner at Nutter, McClellan and Fish in Boston. You can give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And Allison Burrows, let me come over to you. This is a case, as we've mentioned, of daunting sort of complexity. What is the most daunting attribute of this case, aspect of this case, facing these two attorneys as they take it on?
I mean, there's lots of complexities of this case, but just for starters, there have been lots of criminal proceedings against Whitey Bulger. The people that you would expect to be the main witnesses against him in this RICO murder case have testified before. There's pages and pages, thousands of pages of transcripts that are going to need to be gone through and understood to assess their credibility. You want to assess their credibility before you make a decision about what kind of plea deal you can strike for him if he's interested in that. If you're going to prepare it for trial, you need even a better understanding of what's in those transcripts. He's got pending charges in Florida. He's got pending charges in Oklahoma. You need to understand those. There's just a huge amount of paper already generated in this case.
Yeah, and so your best guess in terms of how long a case like this is going to go on, I mean, is it a matter of months, years?
I would guess it'll take them a year to get it ready for trial.
A year before it even gets to trial.
That's my guess. And then somewhere in that second year, they'll try it. And I think you're probably looking at a couple of years of a lot of work on this case.
Hmm. You mentioned these multiple charges in multiple states. There are murder charges in Florida and Oklahoma, correct? Jeffrey, let me come to you. How is that balanced? I mean, is this a case literally of competing attorneys in different states trying to get hold of this guy, or how has that worked out?
I think at this point he's in Massachusetts and he stays in Massachusetts till the United States government here releases him. I think that you saw them today dismiss a 1994 indictment. I think one of the reasons they did that was they have an 81-year-old guy who may not be around all that much longer. They want to try him. They want to get some closure. They want justice. They recognize, I think the notion that it's going to take a year is very optimistic. You know, you've got to go through all the Connolly stuff. I mean, literally, there's probably 5 to 10 major trials that have occurred that you have to understand and master before you can really get into this case. I would say it's going to take easily a year and a half, 2 years to get to trial. I think the government's going to want to speed it up, and I think it's in Bulger's interest to make it go as slowly as he can. He's here. He's in a place where he can be visited by friends. He's more comfortable here. And at the end of the day, when he leaves Massachusetts, and it's hard to imagine, even as a hard-boiled defense attorney as I am, that he's going to leave here a free man, at least as far as the state, the government here, the United States government, Massachusetts, is concerned, because the amount of evidence against him is, that's what's really daunting. He's going to go to a place where they can execute him. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the federal government here's desire to get him there as quickly as possible and let Florida and Oklahoma deal with him. And I think it's got to be Bulger's great interest not to get executed. So he's going to want to string this out as long as he can. And Oklahoma and Florida are going to want to get him as quickly as they can, because at the end of the day, he's not going to be playing Parcheesi and poker and bocce in some federal prison somewhere. He's going to be looking to be strapped into a chair and be electrocuted in Florida or Oklahoma, and that's what we're really talking about here. Hmm. His game is to make it take as long as it can, and the government's going to want to get him out of as quickly as they can.
Well, let's take a couple of calls. Let's go to Val, who's calling from Scituate. Hi, Val. I understand you're a defense attorney.
That's right. I'm a criminal defense attorney from California, actually. I just moved to Mass area. I had some thoughts about the case. One, I would love to defend Whitey Bulger as a defense attorney and a defender of the Constitution. It's like you couldn't ask for a better, more fun case to get involved with. But also, I kind of thought that, you know, he has so much dirt on the FBI that maybe they're going to want to strike a deal with the guy. Maybe they are going to send him to a country camp, you know, and he's not going to be facing the chair just as quickly as you might think, because they're not going to want him to use the subpoena power to get a bunch of federal FBI former agents, maybe even some current ones. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, on the stand under cross-examination and rub the dirt in the face of the feds.
All right, Val.
I don't know what your expert pick about
that. Well, Val, it's a great point. I'm glad you brought it up. Let's go to our expert, Allison Burroughs. Jeffrey Denner's shaking his head. I'll go to you in a second, Jeffrey.
Well, an interesting point on that. If the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the federal government in Massachusetts didn't want to bring some closure to the FBI situation, they could have shipped him off to Oklahoma or Florida first. It would have been a much quicker trial. If he'd gotten the death penalty there, there would actually be no need to try him here at all. So I think that there have been some behind-the-scenes discussions, and everybody has more or less decided that to put some closure on this and to reinvigorate the FBI's credibility with the people, that they're willing to run the risk and let that information come out. A lot of it's come out already, and there's lots of new folks at the Bureau these days. That old regime is gone, and I think there's a lot of good people there who would like to, or at least maybe not like to, it's not going to be pleasant for them, but are willing to have this aired and put behind them.
Mm. What do you think, Jeffrey Denner, about our caller's question?
I agree with that. I mean, the corrupt culture of the 1980s and the FBI in the early 90s is been replaced by a very, very different atmosphere there. I don't think he has anything that's going to be of great help first of all, he's not getting at anything. There's no deal he can make in the world that's going to put him in a country club or anything other than ultimately the electric chair. The only deal he can make, and again, I can be wrong. In fact, I regularly am. But my best guess here is that the only deal he can make is for his girlfriend. And the deal there is not that she simply will do well in what she's charged with, but they could charge her with an awful lot of other stuff. She is complicit in a lot of different things, from money laundering to racketeering herself. And my best guess is they're going to squeeze him by squeezing her, and any information that he has that he can give over. And again, as far as I'm concerned, he's a psychopath and a sociopath. It's rare to get them both in the same diagnostic formula. And I don't think he really wants to do a heck of a lot for anybody. But assuming that he does choose to do something, there's no deal in the world he can make for himself that's going to make his life much easier.
Let's try to get at least one more call in this segment. Let's go to Roberta, who's calling from Newton. Hi, Roberta.
Hi there. It's kind of interesting. I was waiting to get back for you to get back to me. I was thinking, what if everybody just keeps him in jail until he dies of old age or ill health, and just keep postponing his trials? But that was not the question, and that's not what I answered originally, because everybody under the Constitution and the law has a right to a fair trial. But I would like to see that the public does not have to pay for his defense, and I see that this trial is going to be an enormous one, the magnitude of the same that Pacific Gas and Electric had, in case nobody knows what that is, if you saw Erin Brockovich, the movie,
sure.
that was the company.
Right.
And also, all these little tentacles of information, and I wonder what was the agreement between the FBI. Did they ever at any time have him under, what do they call it, where do they place you in a safe place?
You mean under surveillance?
No, where they keep somebody safe.
Oh, in a safe house you're talking about. Yeah, keeping him in a safe house or something like that. Roberta, I think we just lost you there, but Roberta raised one issue, and that is he's elderly. He could have health issues. Could that at some point prevent a trial like this from going forward? Allison Burroughs.
I mean, it could at some point. He seems fairly hale and hearty at the moment, and this case will take 2 years to put together, or at least, as Jeffrey says, and then he'll be 83, assuming he's still competent. That will go forward. And then Florida and Oklahoma will have a shot at him. So at some point, he may well get to be too old and too ill to withstand a trial, but that won't result in him being released. That will result in him being held until he either improves enough to have a trial or he doesn't.
Well, there are a lot of questions, obviously, that this trial is going to be raising as we go forward. We just took a stab at them today. Allison Burroughs, thanks so much for coming in. Allison Burroughs, partner at the Nutter, McLennan and Fish law firm in Boston. She's a former prosecutor as well. And Jeffrey Denner, thank you for coming in as well.
Pleasure.
Jeffrey Denner, founder and partner of the Boston law firm Denner Pellegrino. And listeners, thank you for your calls. There's an active online conversation going on right now around this issue. Shane McBride writes on Facebook, despite the probability that he has more money stashed away, everyone has the right to a public defense. Our judicial system is more important than any one criminal. You can join that conversation by going to radioboston.org. Stay with us. We'll be back after a short break. Up next, what happens when the poor subsidize the wealthy's health care? We take a closer look in our Common Health segment. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.